And two cards remain. Carry over here as well. Canterbury with the pick five today, the 10%, and you know, the advantage of the carryover could maybe anticipate a positive expectation scenario. Brian, good morning.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me on. I absolutely think we'll have a positive takeout scenario with that only 10% takeout, 40,000 already in the pool. You know, even if we hit $250,000 tonight in the pot, I think there'll be more money left over that will actually exceed that 10% takeout. So it'll be a takeout-free pick five tonight, I believe.
No doubt. And we got to mention, I brought it up earlier when I anticipated our visit, and the last two cards of the season, they're giving you three cards for the price of two.
Absolutely. I mean, today we've got three pick fours. We do adjust our starting time, actually. So if you've become accustomed to 4:40 Central time, we will start today at 4:00 Central. So adjust your schedules, get off work a little bit early, and dive into that early pick four, which starts right away in race one.
Well, we'll go through it. And the pick five that starts with that $41,000 carryover, this is a tricky sequence. I thought that there was a horse at the end of the sequence that I'm anxious for your thoughts. But let's start it out with that Nickel Claimer going 6, 8:05 Central. So 9:05 Eastern, plenty of time. Everybody, you know, you can get your Kentucky Downs action in today. And then as Kentucky Downs is winding up, you can merge right into Canterbury, and it'll take you right into the evening. Start out this pick five, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I'm excited or appreciative of in this pick five sequence is not only big field, but I think we'll be void of the even money shots. I don't think you'll be staring at too many 3 to 5 shots over these five races between 9 and 13. It starts with the $5,000 claimers going 6 furlongs. I think both Creative Art along with number 9, Minds Made Up, those are the class of the fields. However, both of them getting up there in age. Creative Art, 10 years old, making start number 94. Prior to his last race, he hadn't won in a long time. Was actually a play against last time, but he did win very impressively. I do think Creative Art, Minds Made Up stand out based on class and their numbers. However, there's a few long shots you could take a look at. I know May We All is a 5-2 morning line favorite. Has really done everything that Cody Rosine has asked of him. A win machine this year, but now takes on the toughest group that he's seen. But if there's some prices that I would throw in, I maybe take a look at Libertarian, the other David Van Winkle trainee, or a horse like Double Turbo for Joel Burns, who's been winning with everything he sends to the track.
I thought that, I mean, to be safe to get through, I had Creative Art, May We All, and Minds Made Up, and then Libertarian and Fender Bender too, actually, as considerations. And so as I structure the ticket later, I'll finalize based on expense, but not the easiest start to the sequence. We come back with another Nickel Claimer. This one, though, a mile, and felt like Homeland Mesa and Pleasant Moon were the major leans, and I suppose small tickets might really want to rely on Homeland Mesa.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, kind of was under an all-out drive the entire way last time out. That was the day where Joel Burnt won 4 races. This could have been his 5th, and I think this was actually the horse that he was expecting to win most, was Homeland Mesa, bet down under even money that day. Kind of has a grinding style, which isn't very conducive to one's eye and watching the replay, but it is second time going 2 turns in here. I think it's a race that, you know, it goes through Joel Burnt as he sends out both the 6 as well as the 10 in Pleasant Moon. Looks to be the controlling pace setter up top. The only horse that I would potentially add in is Drama and Danube, a horse who only lost by 0.5 length to Pleasant Moon and is going to be a much bigger price on the board with Larry Sterling Jr. and Nick Goodwin. That jockey-trainer combination doesn't oftentimes get bet very much, so I think that could be an overlay, along with Campaign Spy, who's frankly taken on much better all season long. Right. Now gets class relief today, but the distance is certainly a question for Campaign Spy.
What do you think about the stretch-out candidates in here, notably Son of Poseidon, Tony Rengsdorf? And this is something that Tony does well, stretching horses out.
Yeah, you know, the Minnesotans in here, 1, 2, and 4, are horses that I will likely play on a pick four ticket, but unfortunately with how the pick five plays out, they won't be on my pick five. Okay. So those would be some long shots that would get me off to a great start on a pick four, but they'll be horses that I play against in the pick five. Just they're a step below. They're Minnesotans taking on open company in here. And Son of Poseidon, I mean, he's been overlooked multiple times this year. He won at 40-1. And then he won again at 10-1 at similar class levels. So you might be on to something with Son of Poseidon, but I'm going to try and take a stand against at least for the pick five.
Fair enough. Let's go to the third leg in here, and this is the 11th race. We've got Minnesota Bred looking to clear an allowance, and I thought this was tough. You know, I had a handful, and I didn't even know what to do about the 5-2 favorite Public Safety, who I don't think has to win at all.
I'm actually not going to use Public Safety on my ticket. It's going to be a horse that I take a stand against. This is a race where I am going to go light. This is where I'm going to narrow down my ticket. However, it's a race that it probably makes me the most uncomfortable of any race in the sequence. There is a lot of cheap speed in this race, and there are going to be some fast fractions, and this race looks like it could potentially fall apart. I'm going to use the 4, 7, and 10. Henry O'Henry, lightly raced, set some fast fractions last time, and you know, kind of runs like a horse who pops and stops. I won't speculate on what's going on with Henry O'Henry, but does run a little bit like a horse who might have some breathing issues. But that's just speculation on my part. And then Gopher Gold, you know, turf to dirt in play, should get the distance. I think that one could sit a great trip right off that first flight going on the lead. And then Little Ninja has taken on much tougher, showed a ton of talent as a 2-year-old, hasn't necessarily progressed as a 3-year-old. But absolutely gets class relief today out of 3 back-to-back stakes races. 4, 7, and 10 for me.
Yeah, all three of them absolutely are imperatives, and a couple that I put question marks next to Circle Me Bert for Larry Donlin, and Sioux Valley kind of intrigued me a little bit coming off the win, and then the class raise, which is a vote of confidence by Kevin Danger.
Yeah, and I mean, Sioux Valley could get a great setup in here. I think Circle Me Bert's going to be part of that hot pace. Henry O'Henry, there's a lot of speed in this race. Going 6 furlongs, anything can happen. And we saw last race, you know, Sioux Valley really fell into the wind. Went off at 8-1, but Circle Me Bert set fast fractions, and Sioux Valley was the only one really running at the end. You see, they went 22-1, 45-2. They were blazing up front. Race fell apart, and Sioux Valley fell right into it. Could happen again, despite the class jump.
Well, and, you know, one other point about Henry O'Henry, Mac Robertson gets Arietta in here, too, as an added benefit to trying to get him around. The 12th is first-level open company allowance going 6.5, and we got a lot of things happening in here. We got some horses that it's been a long time between drinks. You got a turn back or two. You've got horses coming off of wins versus lesser. There's a lot of decisions to make in this 12th race.
It's such a difficult race. And so on my ticket, I typically like to play 2 tickets. On 1 ticket, I'm going to single a team success at 5-1, Deodoro, Arietta. If you draw a line to the last race, it really wasn't even a bad race. I'm not a buyer speed figure guy, but actually ran the best buyer of this year so far, a 79. But before that, a win on the dirt and a win at this class level, taking them gate to wire. And the team success really ran a winning race last time out, just ran into a complete freak, Slews Him, who's 5 years old, didn't debut until this year at 5 years old, is now a perfect 3-for-3, and is likely going to be in stakes company shortly because Slews Him is a complete beast on the track. So a team success with a single for me on 1 ticket. On the other ticket, I'll probably spread out 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, and 7. No real strong opinion in here. I will say that the 6.5 furlong distance has catered more towards sprinters than it has towards horses cutting back. I think it's a distance that you want to be near or close to the lead. So I'm interested to see how horses on the cutback, which there's plenty of them in here, 1, 2, and 5, that I'm going to be using are cutting back from 1 mile to the 6.5 furlongs. The endurance won't necessarily be an issue, but we'll see if they can keep up early. And I think attain success, race to win or lose in the race 12.
I thought Speeding Kid was was one of the ones that I wanted to use prominently, kind of you know, coming back after trying second level allowance company, which has proven too tough, came back to first level allowance types, and is in here for the tag. I thought Van Winkle and Lindsay were okay, 9-2 on that seven speeding kid, but not the easiest group. Now, the one thing that I thought could help ticket building, Brian Aragone with us from Canterbury on the penultimate card, and a $41,000 carryover in the pick five today, and he's loose for Mac Robertson in the nightcap, seems a very likely winner.
Yeah, he easily could be. I'm not sure I trust him that much. You know, Mac typically doesn't dominate at these lower level class ranks, and the one thing that is a concern, at least for me, is the horse made the drop last time out, dropped him right to the bottom against state bred allowance, went off at 2-5, and still didn't get the win. Now cutting back to 6 furlongs, I think, you know, this is a horse that the connections, it didn't pan out with. And, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't trust him. You're right. Based on the numbers and based on the fractions and everything, he should win. But that's been the case with him kind of all meet. Been beaten at odds below 2-5 twice. Very easily could go off favored in here again. And Andy's loose. While his numbers certainly fit, I'm going to try and take a stand again. I'm going to play a horse, Rock the Pulpit, number 10. Turf to dirt in play in a race where not many of them want to go this far. He could potentially stay close enough early and kind of keep grinding away. Reminds me of a grinding horse. Has speed. Hasn't really shown all that much finish. But win a mile in the 16th on a wet track, then tried a mile on the turf. Esteban Martinez, his first year here at Canterbury Park, he fits Morris' winner to price. Like Rock the Pulpit on the outside. I will use some other horses as well. Twirling Cotton Candy, a horse that has taken on tougher, bred to love the turf course, but really didn't handle it all that well last time out, now gets back to the dirt today. And then maybe a horse like Shattered Dreams, Mike Bollinger, Miguel Arroyo. These connections will be deservedly 1,000,000-1, but horse showed some talent, I guess, earlier this year and hasn't really panned out, but they've definitely taken on much tougher. They did have a gap between June and September. Now goes second time off the layoff. I think Shattered Dreams could upset the apple cart. But this is a race that I'm going to try and spread out and have my other ticket. One single will probably be Rock the Pulpit. I'm going to take a stand against Andy Blue.
Well, and we should probably alert people, too, to the first-time starter in here. And let's be honest, Nazdrave, the 6, might not have to be much horse to beat these.
No, absolutely not. You know, the concern for me is a 3-year-old by Secret Circle. The breeding's certainly there. And you know, Francisco Bravo can pop at a price, you see, or pop at first asking. You see wins at 24%. My concerns with Nazdrave is not only debuting at the bottom, but they were working out consistently since April. He actually had this horse with him down at Will Rogers, came to Canterbury Park, has a ton of workouts, and those workouts certainly don't look like a $5,000 claimer for me. So maybe the horse runs off the page, but might not pop at all, really. With how many workouts there are, and that is a red flag for me with a first-time starter debuting where he is.
No, fair enough, and just, you know, the 47 flat, and there's a solid gate work from mid-August. Secret Circle actually gets a disproportionate number of first out winners. There's some things to like in a, you know, in a field of suspects. You know, a lot
what
of times.
What do you think when, that horse? What do you think that horse goes off at? I'm not sure if that horse will get played. That not at all. The three back-to-back excellent workouts in a field that you're not going to have to be much to win this race.
Yeah. You'd have to think he's going to take some money. But, you know, is he in a tizzy? And he's loose. I agree. Rock the Pulpit. He's got to be third or fourth choice, I imagine. Fourth choice, probably. 6-1.
Yeah, 9-2, you know? 5-1.
Yeah.
Somewhere on there.
Yeah. Yeah. In that range. It'll be interesting. That's one of those, you know, you look at a field like this where you got horses that are, you know, 14th start, 15th start, 10th start. You know, you generally, with low-level maiden claimings, you want somebody that looks less like a career maiden, or as we sometimes say, and we don't mean to be disparaging, but, you know, the frog with the least warts. And So, you know, a fresh face is always welcome in a spot like this too. So it's, but it's a fun sequence, and there's going to be nice money bet into this, and everybody's Wednesday night has got to include this action. And then their Thursday night to say goodbye to Canterbury. Let's give everybody a quick glance ahead, Brian, to tomorrow's two stakes, the Shakopee Juvenile and the HBPA, the 8th and the 9th.
Absolutely, and starting out with Fluke Him, a horse that we just talked about not that long ago, here's where he lands. A pretty cool story for Sluice Him, and a story that doesn't work out the way it has very often. So with Sluice Him, I had heard Wade Rarick found this horse and some farm. I think he gave the owner $1,800. $1,800, a five-year-old, is now a perfect 3-for-3. Won the last race with a 90 buyer speed figure, made over $50,000, and is now in the Tom Benson HPBA Stakes just a couple of months later. That's an unbelievable story for Wade Rarick to find that he had with Sluice Him.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, Sluice Tis now, I brought up Joe Lacombe's name, I don't know, a couple of months ago, but maybe a month ago. I think I asked Brad Free, you know, what, you know, I know Mr. Lacombe's gotten up, but, you know, he had those two brothers, Sluice Tizzy and Sluice Tis now. So it's fun to see a Sluice Tis now running in Minnesota.
Absolutely. And it's a pretty cool story. I mean, at 5 years old, matured, and he's a physical tank. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him after the season. I know at 5 years old, lightly raced, but really didn't have any issues. The previous owner just didn't know what he had. Apparently, he had something good sitting right in his backyard.
Amazing.
Now, the Shakopee Juvenile, that's a very talented group with that Shakopee Juvenile. It's only a field of six, but there's some talented horses in that one, don't you think?
It seems like it. Those are nice, respectable, you know, figures for, you know, for the kind of group that you've got. It's also about as eclectic a set of regional bred programs. You got a Louisiana bred, Kentucky, Maryland, Idaho, another Kentucky, and Minnesota. So virtually all points on the compass.
Absolutely, and I'm excited to see this heart full of soul. A two-year-old filly by Violence. You want to talk about trainers that do their homework. I don't know how they found this Maryland bred or what the plan was with this Maryland bred. I know Max has been more prominent back out in Delaware this year than he has been in years past, you know, with his father Hugh, but a Maryland bred, a filly taking on the boys, and, you know, typically I wouldn't love that angle, but Max done it with success in the past. In fact, he had Amy's Challenge taken on the boys early on in her career as well. So Heartful of Soul certainly catches my eye in here of the other horses, but maybe Strong Rules. Unfortunate break down on the inside, breaking from post number one is never ideal, but Heartful of Soul is going to get my attention. We'll see how she looks on the track. Arietta for Mac, and a filly taken on the boys for a trainer who's done it with success in the past.
You got a first-time starter in here for Nevada Litvin as well, big in the city, a trap shot colt out of a Smart Strike mare, and a May foal, too. So seemingly, I'm just looking up and down. Big Buffy's a May foal as well for Wade Rarick, coming off the maiden win, going five. And let's see, who's gone six? West of Waverly's gone six. And Edge to Edge. Yeah. That, you know, a lot of times during the summer, Saratoga and Del Mar, when we get to the stakes portion, you know, the horses that have already gone the distance, I kind of lean toward them. A nice way to end the season. And Brian, as I said yesterday to Andrew Offerman as well, Canterbury deserves so much credit, and you've done such a great job all summer long. And you know, looking forward already to next year. And the organization deserves tremendous credit. Favorite of the horse players, you've gone out of your way to, you know, to appeal to the horse players, and the 10% takeout, you know, hyper aggressive, and you guys were willing a few years ago to you know, do something nobody else has done, and that's have across the board lower takeout to try to build churn. So you guys have made the most of a difficult situation, and I know people that have tuned into you are appreciative of your approach, because you're a great ticket builder, and you got a great opinion. So thanks for everything.
We certainly appreciate it here at Canterbury. You know, with the change from Thursday to Sunday, now going Monday through Thursday, it was definitely an adjustment. But thankfully, the fans that have followed along with us were, you know, 15 million over any handle records of the past. So we're appreciative of it and thankful that this experiment with the 10% takeout has paid off. And thankful, you know, as me, not only working as an employee of Canterbury, but as a bettor myself, thankful, what a way for us to go out with our first carryover, you know, 40,000 in the pool, expecting some record numbers in that pot tonight. So I'm very excited to see what we can get with this 10% takeout pick five tonight.
Brian, what do you do with the when the season's over?
I work full time, so Canterbury is just kind of my hobby. I've always loved the horses, always wanted to get my foot in the door with horses. You know, I thought I'd be shoveling manure a lot earlier than I was being the paddock analyst at Canterbury. I didn't expect to get my foot in the door as a paddock analyst by any means. But off the Canterbury airways, I handle litigation for an insurance firm. So I'm a bodily injury adjuster, lit spec for an insurance company.
Tremendous. Well, as a sideline, then it's particularly impressive, because really it's been fun to have you on, and it's been fun to watch you during the broadcasts. Well done, and continued success. Look forward to 2021.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for all the time, not only that you've given me, but also Canterbury Park. We certainly appreciate it.
Not at all. Brian Aragone, everybody. Mr. B underscore CBY analyst. And Brian's been really a terrific guide for those that waded into the action at Canterbury this season. And hopefully the Canterbury faithful, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 a night, will get back on track in 2021. We'll stay right here. We haven't taken a break this morning, and we're not going to be able to, because I got to get to Seth Merrow as well. But I promised you a visit from Bob Hutton, and the news in Arizona continues to be just stupefying. The situation at Turf Paradise, laying dormant right now, and with real uncertainty as to where live racing is going to be renewed any time. And meanwhile, the HBPA, under Bob and Leroy's direction, trying to position themselves to, you know, be able to offer live racing. And with that in mind, we welcome Bob Hutton. And Bob, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Give everybody the latest, which since the last time we spoke, about 6-7 weeks ago, we've got the new wrinkle of Turf Paradise refusing to run, creating, you know, yet another difficult scenario for the future of racing in Arizona.
Well, and I kind of called that in March, and a lot of the membership was, you know, understandably the track had been in business for over 50 years, and a lot of people have their homes here, and I just didn't think Mr. Sims was ever going to run again, based on the decisions he was making in March, and just the, you know, as far as his actions were concerned. And so the commission meeting last month, he announced that they weren't going to try to get any racing dates. And Turf Paradise, is, as far as, you know, I can see and I'm concerned, will never open again. I think that it's done. I think by the actions of the track management, and they're selling, Steve, they're selling everything that isn't nailed down or glued. Tables in the clubhouse, pictures off the walls. It looks like Afghanistan out there. So, you know, the future of racing in Arizona is going to be, if a new permittee comes in Maricopa County, which we've been talking to many groups about the potential of coming in, and Arizona Downs up at Prescott. One of the issues that we were that was facing us is Mr. Sims was not releasing our purse money to us, so we had to go ahead and go down to the bank, and fortunately we found a way to go ahead and move it out of the purse account from Turf Paradise to the Arizona HPPA's own purse account, and we were able to get $2.1 million. So we're able to, we could run a meet based on purse money and the accumulation of purse money as it goes forward, and we could do that probably maybe anywhere from mid-November to the beginning of December. But we can't, the horsemen, and I know you understand this, the horsemen, our job is not to go ahead and stand up the permittees and have their facilities ready to race. Our job is to go ahead and get our horses ready and to protect the integrity of the game. And right now, none of the permittees in the state have stepped up and said that they wanted to run. They've shown some interest, but as far as the most part is concerned, we haven't gotten a go or a opening date, and we've got plenty of people in the state that want to race, and the breeders and that have been having their horses turned out since a lot of them since March, April, or May, they're ready to roll, and there's a lot of lives that are being affected, and it's just a crying shame that we might not have any live racing here in Arizona this year.
What is the status, and I know Corey Johnson a long time, actually. What's the status with the Arizona Downs situation, and how can, because, I mean, that at least is a group that likes to race and wants to run race meets. What has to happen, and what are the, you know, what are the potentialities that you're dealing with right now to get, you know, kind of renewed and reborn?
Well, you know, it's usually about money, Steve. You know, I mean, it's always, as far as any business dealings or even family issues going forward, it always seems to be the key to any problem is money. And, you know, Corey Johnson came in with the Arizona Downs group, and he was instrumental in getting it started up. Corey's since taken a back seat. I don't think he's involved with Arizona Downs right now as far as management. I don't know what the ownership group looks like, but I can only say that they've got a problem, and that's been caused over the years by when Monarch wouldn't give them the Monarch signal, and they could not compete with their OTBs as far as showing products. So they were at a huge disadvantage. So they have not been able to, even being open for the last, let's say, year and a half, they haven't been able to accumulate much income or even purse money for the horsemen. So this issue with, you know, the OTB situation out here in Arizona, that they only got, and I only can reference it like this, that Turf Paradise had chocolate ice cream, vanilla ice cream, strawberry ice cream, and the only thing that Arizona Downs had to sell was coffee ice cream, you know, and because they were showing the C&B tracks around the country, and they weren't able to get their hands on the products from the Strana Group or the Monarch, and so that really put a devastating situation as far as financially to them. And unless they can go ahead and get some money and get some backing, I don't know if they're going to be able to run.
Unbelievable, and
yeah, really bad,
Jesus.
Really bad.
How about is there any? I mean, is there potential for Sims to sell? I know that this has been broached before as well.
Well, yeah, and there, I guess there could be potential for that, but you know, there's the people have spoken to Mr. Sims before, and he says he doesn't want to sell to another racing entity, and you know, for whatever reason, to me it. to me, it seems for the only purpose would be because it's most valuable as far as I could see as a racetrack. If you sold it as commercial property, I mean, we all know what's going on in the country right now with commercial property, and a lot of businesses are closing and failing because of the pandemic. But it seems to me that he wouldn't do it for spite, and that's the only reason.
Jesus.
Yeah.
How about Puma? What about the Rialto?
Rialto down there is, the Rialto is one of the issues down there with Rialto is stall space. The other issue is a lot of the trainers that are training horses in Arizona are living in Maricopa, and to drive down the Rialto, that'd be probably an hour and 15 minute, hour and a half trek every day. And that would put a lot of stress on the horsemen. And I just don't, if you look at and I'm a numbers guy, Steve. So when you look at the handle that Rialto used to generate when they ran last year, people flock to that track. I mean, they get 5,000 people going to the track. Nobody bets. The handle is, for a race is $20,000, and when you start cutting up 20 grand, and then you get down to purse money, there's not a lot left. So they were, even with their small purse structure, they couldn't support the purses, and that's an issue. But it's also stall space, and that's a boutique meet down there, and it's great for the fans in Tucson, and it's, as far as the historical event, and the people love it, and I'm all for that. But in a more realistic venue, I just don't think they could support racing in Arizona for, a long period of time.
So, as you stand today, what is the short term plan, and how can HBPA continue to successfully garner the purse money to build up a war chest? And I also, it occurs to me, I just got a great question on Twitter. Is there any potential to partner with any of the Indian casino types?
Well, I'll address that first. The Indian casinos right now, they're in the middle of trying to negotiate their compact because their gaming compact is, I believe it's up in 2 years. And if I could be wrong in that, it might be three. So it's somewhere in that neighborhood. And so I would think we've reached out and tried to stimulate conversation with them. And I just don't think there's much interest there until they know they have their compact signed. As far as the HBPA is concerned, we're just looking for someone to step up and ask for racing dates. If somebody went to the commission and to the Department of Racing in Arizona and said, hey, we want these racing dates because Turf Paradise isn't going to take them, then that's what we're waiting on. We can't take a gun to somebody's head and make them go ahead and ask for racing dates. But, as far as that's concerned, we're open to anybody as long as it's a safe environment and the horsemen know that they're not going to have the rug pulled out from underneath them again. And, as far as what happened in March at Turf Paradise and what happened last summer at Arizona Downs when they ceased racing for 3 weeks because they had purse money issues. Going forward, it's a tough call, Steve, as far as that's concerned. But, the HPPA is looking for a permittee that just is looking for live racing and wants to go ahead and be a part of it in Arizona. A lot of people's lives are at stake right now and their livelihood, the Arizona bred horses, there's a sale coming up and it's it just makes it tough on these people as far as that. I don't have to tell you, breeding a horse, it's there's a lot of money and time that goes into it, and these people really don't have even a stage to sell right now because who would buy an Arizona bred that you don't know if there's live racing in the state?
Unbelievable. And of course, Canterbury ends tomorrow, and you've got any number of Arizona connected entities there that you know, have to make alternate arrangements for the winter now, right? I mean, they've got to come up with some sort of a game plan. It's brutal. This is ridiculous.
The fact that, some of the tracks, like I think it's Zia and New Mexico, some of the tracks, they're announcing their race dates, and they do it at the last minute because of the pandemic. I mean, I understand some of the issues that are taking place right now, but it's really hard for our membership to plan. Not only, you know, before plan A would be to go to Turf Paradise, these people need plan B and plan C because we just don't know what's down the road, you know, as far as that's concerned. But, you know, when we go back to looking at Turf Paradise, Steve, that when Mr. Sims got on the commission meeting and said they didn't want any racing dates and because of the liability, at the same time that day, 20 tracks were running across the country. So, that excuse didn't fly with me. I just thought that was a bunch of crap.
No, you said that months ago, that that was a complete canard. No doubt. Well, Bob, I'm glad that the purse money is secure and you know, set aside, and you know, Massachusetts is in a similar situation, kind of watching and waiting for you know, for a place to run, and let us know, you know, and whatever we can do to communicate and try to, you know, to try to help get things, you know, moving in a direction. It's really sad, to be honest.
Steve, like I told you before, we're always about, you know, number one, the horsemen, and right alongside the bettors, the players, the ones that drive the game. And just so everybody, you know, anybody listening right now, Turf Paradise did not have an agreement or a consent from the Arizona HPPA to show the Derby 2 weeks, almost 2 weeks ago. And the Arizona HPPA signed the consent agreement, even though in our settlement agreement that was in March, and because we didn't want to take it out on the bettors. We didn't think that was fair. And even though the Turf Paradise has caused a lot of the horsemen and the HPPA a lot of grief, we were not going to do that. So I just want everybody to know that we're about racing. We really are about racing and about live racing and about the pageantry of the sport. But some permittees in this country just are not aligned with us.
No, that's apparent in many different shapes and forms, Bob. Bob Hutton, I appreciate it. And anything you need us, anytime you need the platform to, you know, to keep this ball in the air, feel free to ask. Let me know.
Okay, thank you, Steve, very much.
Not at all. Bob Hutton, everybody, the Arizona HPPA, and this is really, I mean, this is just an untenable situation. And, you know, he mentions people that have homes in and around Phoenix, and what do they do now? I mean, they just spent the summer in Minnesota, and it's amazing. Seth Merrow is standing by, and I had to get to Seth because last week we ran out of racetrack, and we pretty much are running out of racetrack again today. Seth, good morning.
I'm dropping in for a quick visit. Turf Paradise. A nice little track in the wintertime that I think if people watched in, over the last few years, you've seen some notable trainers that, this time of year or springtime through this time of year, move on to other tracks, but it provided part of that circuit. And so, you know, without a track like that, and I saw a couple of pictures online over the past couple of weeks where the place has just kind of gone to pot. It's really a shame.
Not good news. I mean, nice that they've got access now to at least putting away that money. They could definitely run a meet, but this Jerry Sims has been, I mean, just a complete obstacle toward anything these last several years. It's very sad, and I don't know what's going to push the peanut, as we we used to say at Proctor. Seth, I haven't even had a chance. We didn't talk last week, as I said, but there is something for you. There is a part. There is a very nice, you know, parting gift, as they used to say on the game shows. I've got something to mail to you. So,
okay.
Text me the address. I've got something you're gonna like.
All right. Well, now, very intriguing. Very good. Yeah. I hadn't talked to you since last week, and, you know, wrap up of the Saratoga season and whatnot. But there is a fan base out there for the Sunday morning show. There were a couple of the last couple of days. I always toss out the email and say if people want to, you know, write in about the morning programming we do and what you liked and what you might like to see more of, et cetera, et cetera. But there were a couple of nice emails that liked the Sunday morning show. And then I was out at dinner the other night, and at the next table, people were saying, oh, I like the programming. Yeah, you and Bick on Sunday mornings, really like that. So people are very appreciative of the Sunday morning Loose on the Lead program.
How about the guy that hates me? Did you hear from him?
I don't know if I ever told you about the handwritten letter I got. Like, I get very little, thank God, of the social media negativity. But the guy must have spent an hour. It was two pages, single spaced, handwritten, and he didn't like anything I did. So you're not alone.
Well, I've gotten to the point where when it comes to the stuff that comes in the mail, I can tell. You kind of feel it to make sure, you know, there isn't any of that. What is the stuff that got mailed around? the resin? Anthrax. Yeah. that's my only concern. The guy didn't like me making fun of you, but that's the show. That's the whole gag. That's the whole point.
Clearly he misses the thrust of the show. He was not on board for that. Maybe it was his first time.
It's definitely a capital OTB guy because he doesn't like me marauding in. As if I parachuted into the show out of nowhere. It's pretty funny. He called me Wally Cox lookalike, which I made me laugh. That was
wow.
The best part.
Well,
the guy is
dating himself. At least you can narrow it down to an age range.
So we could do. We could do like an FBI profile now of the guy. We know we're looking for a white male. It's always a white male, by the way, and probably one of these incens, one of these involuntary incels, involuntary celibates that between the ages of 65 and 80. That's our. made me laugh. I'll tell you, it's. I think I deleted it. It's too bad. I should have forwarded it to you. You would have loved it. He's clearly a Seth groupie. There's no doubt. He doesn't like his Seth. Anybody making fun of his Seth? Believe me, they love you. They love you. You're.
They're legion out there.
Absolutely.
My
you're Mr. You're like, you know what it is? It's you're like Captain Kangaroo, and I'm like Mr. Moose. It's
there's another reference. Coming in fast and furious.
I got a bullwinkle today too.
I would bet 80% of your audience. I would bet 90% of your audience isn't familiar with Wally Cox.
No, that can't be. Come on.
I mean, he wasn't that huge to begin with. And he hasn't been around for 30 years.
That's probably, you know what? That's a fair point. That's a fair point. And Hollywood Squares, the original, you know, the real Hollywood Squares. And Mr. Peepers, right? Mr. Peepers.
And he also, he played like a superhero.
Well, he was the voice of Underdog.
That too, but he was actually, it was a live action. He would take a big pill. I'm going to have to look that up now. He would take, I think, I'm sure it didn't last more than a season. He would take like this huge pill and he would become a kind of a wacky superhero.
Interesting. That I don't. That I mean, Underdog used to take that pill out of the ring.
Oh, I don't remember that. I remember I Underdog. I know he did it. Pure polypurebred, right?
You bet. Yeah. Sweet polypurebred.
Yeah. Okay. I knew there was a three. Yeah, I knew it was a threesome.
Well, now you're gonna. After the show, I'm gonna have to look up. I can't place that.
I'm gonna have to look it up too. I distinctly remember it, but I can't remember what the name of it was.
Interesting. Well, I'm going to try to catch up here. We got a couple of minutes. Didn't mention yet this morning. It's been a wall to wall 3 hours. I guess Ken McPeak says that there's a chance now that Swiss Skydiver is going to go to the Preakness, particularly if Tis the Law doesn't go.
I did see that. After they came out of the winner's circle in the Alabama, somebody said, you know, obviously Kentucky Oaks next. Would you consider the Preakness? And he said, yeah, we'd consider the Preakness, depending on, you know, factors. And so, you know, not a shock to see him still considering it. It's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do with Tis the Law. And Authentic gets a chance at a second classic, which I think would start to make the three-year-old Eclipse maybe a little bit interesting. So we'll see how that all plays out. But, you know, I watched the Derby. I didn't talk to you last week, but I watched the Derby up in the press box, and the air came out of the room a little bit. And I hear the same was true in some of the watch parties around town. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the Preakness does play out. I'll be interested to see how many horses they get and, you know, who does show up.
You got any plays today? What are you playing?
Well, yeah, I'm doing the show. I'm heading down to the studio after this. So some Kentucky Downs, obviously. The two-year-old races at Kentucky Downs were maybe a little bit interesting. The later part, and I will say, Kentucky Downs, I was in on Saturday doing television, and the stakes played out fairly legitimately, let's say. Otherwise, it's if you're right, you get paid, but it's tough in some races. So I'll throw that caveat out first. But in the first race, I thought Spyglass might be interesting for him. Asmussen, his horses do well second start. There's a sibling called Indigo Gin that was second in the debut, then first, then fourth, then first, then first. The fifth start was a stakes race, but the maiden breaker in the second race of the career was on turf. So I thought Spyglass at 8-1 might be a little bit interesting in the opener. There were some other horses in there that I think you'd make cases for as well, but I thought that one, again, the switch turn, second start for Asmussen, could be a player in there.
I love it. Good one.
The third race, Tis Splendid News. I like McLean's Music, first-time starters. The dam produced a sibling called Made Me Shiver that was first.
Oh, yeah.
Horse. Fourth and first to start the career. So a little McLean's Music, a little win on the bottom side. Wesley Ward, you know what that means? A little nature and nurture at work.
Hey now! Nice!
And then in the
10 seconds.
American Tryst.
American Tryst.
That breeding. So there you go.
Very good. Nice. I love it. Seth Merrow, everybody, along with Pat McKenna, Hammer, Brian Skirka, Sid Fernando, Sire White Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, Brian Aragoni and Bill Downs, Bob Hutton from Arizona, and Seth Merrow from Boston Spa. Back with you tomorrow. I'm going to put up, give me a little bit of time, I'm going to wait for the scratches, and I'll put up Canterbury. My thoughts on that carryover sequence. Good luck to everybody playing in the Turf Championship as well at Kentucky Downs. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.